Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You were with the original group. Why don't you introduce everybody?
Everybody. Okay. Ian Gillan.
Good morning. Good evening.
Good day.
Bev Villain, Geezer Butler, and me, Tony Iommi. That's me.
Now, you're new.
Yep.
And you're new.
Yep.
You both have come from very different kinds of backgrounds to a heavy metal group, a very popular heavy metal group with a long history. Did it take a lot of thinking to make the decision to join?
Not once I'd met Tony and Geezer.
Why is that?
Well, because I realized that we were similar. I was impressed by their attitudes, their sort of hunger and drive and belief in what they were still doing after all these years. And also, we have the same habits.
The same?
Habits.
Habits. What kinds of habits?
Drinking habits.
Terrible drinking habits.
The first meeting we had was in a pub in England, halfway between London and Birmingham, and I think after about 2 hours, the meeting was adjourned to under the table.
So you knew these were your kind of guys.
Exactly, yeah.
You are listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast, part of the Decibel Geek Podcast Network. We are wrapping up our month-long Halloween tribute to the most evil Halloween spooky band of all time, Black Sabbath. In this last episode, we get into the Lost Era. That is everything that didn't involve Dio or Ozzy. Enjoy, bitches. Welcome to Cobras and Fire. My name is Baco, and back with us for the lost era of Black Sabbath is the mortifying Gene Vogel. Gene, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fabulous, man. I'm happy to be part of this big discussion that we're having, celebrating Black Sabbath.
Yeah, and it's appropriate that we're talking about the lost era, because somewhere along the line we lost Loose Cannon. So we're gonna forge on without him during this. What are your thoughts of? I don't know. Basically, what we're getting into, it starts with Born Again and ends with Forbidden. This whole era is just kind of like it's not talked about a lot for somewhat obvious reasons, but were you a fan of Black Sabbath while this era was happening, or is this something you kind of learned about it going backwards?
Backwards, definitely. Yeah. After Dio, everything just changed, but part of it was music was changing. Mm-hmm. You know, going with Metallica and all these bands that were just blowing up, the thrash scene was blowing up, and that was part of my transition. I was, you know, big into the Dio and Quiet Riot actually was a big band for me back then as well, Van Halen. But then things started to get heavier, and I kind of steered away from what Sabbath was doing, I guess. And it happened with other bands as well, not just
Sabbath. So you were a Sabbath fan, but you just kind of checked out with Born Again? Or after Dio?
Yes, pretty much. Born Again really wasn't even on our radar. You know, in my, you know, we have your friend group, you know, where everybody's sharing tapes, or you're talking about music, and then everybody's trying to get that new big band, and you want to be the one to break it with your local group. So that was never really part of it. It was all, we kind of just went in a different direction. Sabbath was kind of the old guys, you know, and Priest was a little bit like that, but Priest, I don't, they kind of locked in a little bit more. There was something with the Priest sound. I think Priest went in the direction where they were kind of honing their sound, minus the Turbo.
Yeah. You know,
they were still trying to capture the sound of the
I love Turbo. Though. What's your problem?
Well, I mean, it's not a big favorite for
I know
most
what
you're,
I get your overall point, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
A little poppier.
Poppier, and it really captures the sound of the time. Where I think the other Priest stuff, well, except for the 70s Priest stuff, I think that kind of transcends a little bit better. Where Turbo, you with the synthy stuff, and Sabbath gets into that too. They introduced a lot of synthy stuff, obviously going out of the 70s and into the 80s, and then basically I always had a keyboard player from, I can't even think what album.
Jeff Nichols, I think, comes in on Never Say Die.
Okay.
So if not, it's the...
Was it kind of officially he became almost like the hidden member from that point on?
Yeah, at some point they actually considered him a member, I think, towards the end.
He was on stage, I think, on the tour, wasn't he, for the end? Or was he kind of...
No, he was. Aside? He died in 2017, and he was not part of the reunion with the 13 tour.
The replacement dude. I can't think of his name.
Yeah, I don't remember. Was it one of the guys from Emerson, Lake and Palmer, or something like that?
Good God.
Wasn't it Emerson? No,
I'm sorry. I can't think of the guy.
Look it up, people. Yeah. Come on. Facts are not we're not here for facts.
We're not here for facts. This is all opinion.
Well, my dad worked at in an auto dealer in Faribault, Minnesota, and on Saturdays I would go to work with him, and he'd give me some busy work, and then he'd give me like, you know, $10, and there was a local music store called Eastman Music, and I would really do no work. He would, you know, I would basically spend the entire time there flipping through records, looking at covers, you know, wishing I could take more of this stuff home. You know those little holes in cassettes? You know, like, do you remember the cassette? They were on, like, the long end. They were kind of like these two little tiny holes on the bottom box where, like, I'm not describing it very well. But
on the case you're talking about.
Yeah, there's actual display cases meant to hold those. And it would lock down, and you'd have these things almost like a poster display.
I gotcha, yeah, yeah.
And this store had that. It's the only place I've ever seen it. But they had the Black Sabbath Born Again cassette and vinyl, and I would stare at that cover forever. I loved it.
Did you?
It's one of my favorite all-time covers.
Really?
My daughter-in-law, actually, 2 years ago for Christmas, got me this ridiculous Born Again purple. It's like it's the color of the album cover, and it's just got that the Red Devil baby on it. She got it like from Yugoslavia or something through like eBay for like way too much money, and so I never wear it because, you know, it's clearly not gonna last. And
yeah, wow.
But yeah, eventually one of those days I took home that record, and boy,
and you fell in love.
Yeah, I love it from the first note to the end. I think it's a great record.
That's one that maybe, yeah, see, for me, going back to it is not as, I don't have any fond memories like you do with it. So when I revisit it, I revisit it as a fan of Sabbath with primarily Dio and Ozzy. Not in that order, not in really any order, but and also a big fan of Deep Purple, more so now than I was as a kid.
Okay.
I mean, I heard the radio songs, but I didn't really get into Deep Purple until within the past I'm going to say 5 years or so.
Oh, really?
And
okay.
It really blew up for me.
Did you like the Born Again album cover, though?
I did not.
What if everybody talks about that cover like it's the most, it's so Sabbathy. It's evil as hell.
It's supposed to be, I understand. But it's also been on a lot of lists of bad album covers.
Yeah, but these are lists by jackasses. I mean,
some of them are
not on my list, and that's the only one that matters, right? Yeah, well, unlike you, I'm more than happy to rank the singers in Sabbath at some point. Ozzy is number one, probably Dio, then Gillan, then Martin, and then all the guys who didn't do anything can be in like a little box at the bottom. But back to Born Again. So any standout tracks on this record for you?
0 to 0.
The two instrumentals, Stonehenge in the Dark.
Are you serious? You do like those?
Well, they're fine, but it's not like you play. They're what, about 20 seconds each?
I understand that, yeah. And I felt like it was a waste of my time.
Segues into the song, kind of a Sabbath tradition.
I know, and they
know.
Do that. I understand. Yeah. I understand. I it's why I kind of let it slide. They were on my notes of time wasted, but
so suffice it to say, you haven't put the needle on this record and got put the moves on the woman, huh?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'd spin Digital Bitch.
For me, it's either Marvin Gaye or this record, you know, it's kind of a toss-up.
What's the batting average on when you're spinning one versus the other?
You know, I never thought about it, but I do a lot better with Marvin Gaye.
Makes a lot of sense to me.
I'm going to try it again tonight, though. My wife will be home in a few
hours. Just don't have the record cover up on the bed. that'll probably adjust the odds just a touch.
Oh, but this is such a fun era, though. I mean, because there's so many rumors about them recording in a castle and, like, Disturbing the Priest is about, like, they were too loud for a neighboring monastery or something like that. And Trashed is literally because Ian and one of the guys went to pub and got fucked up and came home and came back to the studio or wherever they're recording, crashed a car. And, you know, when you hear these things, especially growing up, you're like thinking like, these guys are all living together, and they just see each other all the time. They just wake up, record, get wasted, and crash cars, you know? And it's, you know, obviously we know that it's probably not quite like that. They're probably going home to different places, but I just, everything about this album delivers, from the font they used for the logo and the title, to the album cover, to the weird back cover with Bill Ward and, you know, Ian Gillan screaming on this. To me, I don't know, I would give this 5 out of 5.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow. That's, I couldn't even tell you what I would rate it on a out of scale of 5. I'm thinking, part of it too is you know, sometimes you refer back to albums. Like, there's been albums that I've had little to no time for, but then years later you give it another try, and then maybe sometimes a song will click or something. And but then there's some, of course, that you go through that just will never work. You know, no matter how many times you listen to it, it just will not.
We're getting to an album like that for me that you actually did on your show, Disciples of the Watch.
That was that was the one you were going to bring up.
But you know, you just mentioned something that reminded me of a conversation we had, and we haven't had many, so they all stick out to me. And that was that podcasting you mentioned kind of revitalized your passion for music in a way, and very much so for me. It really resonated with me. That was one of the reasons why I was like, you know, that and the fact that you were able to talk for an hour about the album Forbidden. I'm like, well, he can clearly handle a podcast, but that passion, it was a pretty quick connection there that I was like, that's maybe he's the guy to bring on, because we'd been talking about doing this for a while. You know, like we've done like the Megadeth one and the Alice Cooper with Joey Haney from Rock Strikes 10. Yep. You know, we wanted to bring in like a third voice kind of to join us in this. So anyway, that's my way of saying thank you. But that's kind of what the catalyst was to the first domino, that little exchange we had.
I don't know if it's the guy I'm working with my brother Nate doing the podcast, or if it's just, or both, because we were kind of, I don't want to say we grew up together, because he was kind of not in part of my group. He'd get into our neighborhood from time to time. I don't know how he wandered in there, but you know, we'd hang out from time to time, and then him and I had a little bit of a connection, and then we spent many years apart. But musically, it was only a few minor connections between the two of us. We both like Kendrick's, we both like Sabbath, and there was a few other crossovers. Kennedy. So getting back together and working on it, I think it just was, just putting the focus into the music again and kind of remembering what it's all about. I mean, because we get older and we kind of, sometimes you forget about those things that used to bring you joy. And if you're not paying attention to some of that stuff, you're missing out on the new stuff that can...
That's
can
the big thing.
Get into your wheelhouse. Even if it's not new, like... Born Again is a very old album that I'd never really paid attention to until more recently.
Yeah.
So I would like to revisit it down the road a little bit more later on and see, is it one of those things that clicks? Because I really do like Gillan. One of my complaints about this album, and I know it wasn't supposed to be a Sabbath album, is it shouldn't have been a Black Sabbath album.
Yeah. Do you believe that, though?
Ian Gillan himself said it's,
well, they've all kind of hinted at that back and forth over the years. I have a hard time believing that they were going to do it as something else, but
well, I think they were trying to do like a supergroup type of thing where it's Black Sabbath with Ian Gillan, and then they were going to have something completely autonomous from Black Sabbath. Just they're carrying Ian Gillan's weight, and Sabbath was carrying their weight into this project, and then the record label just said, well, this is going to be Black Sabbath.
Yeah, and this entire era can kind of fit that category where, like, maybe this isn't really Black Sabbath. I mean, I'm perfectly willing to accept all of it as Black Sabbath just because of the way it went. Yeah. I understand some of the conversations, but it seems like we get different stories as time goes on. And so sometimes I'm not really sure how serious to take stuff, especially coming from Ozzy. He seems to have a different story about everything every time, but he's not in this era right now. But well, this is also the infamous tour that inspired the Spinal Tap Stonehenge, where it was like they inches instead of feet or something. And so they made this thing, the Stonehenge, that couldn't even fit in an arena. I'm still not even sure how they fit it on a semi if you couldn't get it into an arena. But that being said, they used it like twice because the guy wrote meters instead of feet or something. So it's many Spinal Tap
oversight.
Moments with this band. But I would have been a fun tour to see, man. I don't know. It just seemed like I think there's a lot of energy and revitalization with this record, coming considering everything they had gone through with Bill Ward coming back even.
I felt like it was a lackluster effort by Bill Ward.
Okay, really?
Yes. You know, when you listen to all that he's done in the Ozzy era, this, to me, didn't feel like it was even really Bill Ward.
Huh.
I didn't have, like, the jazzy vibe that he usually brings to his work.
I did not walk away with that feeling. I liked it.
I wouldn't say it was bad. It just didn't feel like...
Not his best?
What Bill Ward would bring to the table back, you know, when he was in his prime. You know, and we're not talking very far removed from when he was out of Sabbath either. We're not talking 20 years later. We're talking when Dio was in to where he's in on this.
Right.
So it wasn't a huge leap in time. Obviously, there's probably a lot of substance abuse between then and there, but or unless he was getting clean at that point. I kind of lost where his timeline is on his.
Yeah, he kind of bopped in and out with that same kind of mentality. I wasn't staying sober, so I left again. As a matter of fact, I believe he left on this tour in St. Paul.
Oh, really?
Or it was either that or during the Heaven and Hell tour. I can't remember. There was a couple of Minneapolis moments for this era of Sabbath. Yeah, I think it was Heaven and Hell, actually, that he bailed on. He, like, just telephoned Dio and said, I'm at the airport. I'm going home.
Well, that's a rough call to get.
Yeah. Well, right after this, then, Ian Gillan quits. We know he said it was for voice issues, but we know that he basically, you know, Deep Purple reunited and recorded a great album, Perfect Strangers. And, that actually was my first Deep Purple record. I can't remember how I got it. It might have been through one of my record club scams where I just would sign up and then never fulfill it. But I definitely got it, and I loved it. And then I ended up checking out older Deep Purple a little bit.
Yeah, that one was... I remember going to somebody's house. My friend was buying weed from somebody. I didn't smoke it.
Hmm. Sure,
but I was with a friend who was buying weed from somebody, and they had that song. The song itself, Perfect Strangers, was playing. And that's when I fell in love with that song. It was very Kashmir sounding.
Yeah,
and I was a big Zeppelin fan. And it stuck with me from that point on, from 1984 all the way.
And he says fuck on the record, too, and that kind of stuck out at the time. I can't remember what song it was. Nobody's Home.
Now, did you hear rumors they were talking about approaching David Coverdale and Robert Plant? For Sabbath before Ian?
Maybe. I didn't come across it during my research for this, but I know next up was Dave Donato. Does that name mean anything to you? Because I got some fucking minutiae to drop on you if you don't know him. he actually recorded with them. There are some demos available on YouTube that you can hear Dave Donato with Black Sabbath. Kiss fan out there, he ended up starting a band called White Tiger with Mark St. John after Mark St. John left Kiss after Animalize.
Uh-huh.
And it is a horrible... I'll burn you a copy.
I don't have to rush out to my local record store. Thank you.
You won't find it.
Sold out.
Yeah, both copies. No, but so Dave Donato was a pretty strong contender. The rumor was he gave this interview to Kerrang or one of those two magazines in England, then was let go because they didn't like the tenor of the interview. Now, I have actually seen the interview and read it. I don't think that's true. He doesn't say anything remotely, and they had already officially announced him as a singer. But for whatever reason, things just kind of fell flat. My gut feeling is that, like, he was a California kind of rock star kind of guy, and he just didn't vibe well with him. But based on different things I've read, that's kind of the interpretation you can take. Then Ron Keel kind of comes into the picture.
That is interesting.
Yeah. And I talked to Ron Keel about it.
The Black Sabbath kind of thing, that would that fall right between Steeler and Keel? What about was that?
It was. Okay. It was actually, I was in the studio at Pasha Studios in Hollywood, where Spencer Proffer had just recorded Quiet Riot's 10 million selling debut. And so Spencer was the hot guy in town, and
yeah.
I was sneaking into the studio at night to sing demos, and he heard my voice, and he had signed on to produce the next Sabbath album after Ian Gillan left. And he recruited me for the vocal position in Black Sabbath at that time. I was just putting Keel together. They kind of overlapped. I mean, Mark Ferrari, my guitar player in Keel, was at the last Steeler gig. And we all knew it was the last gig. And I was already putting the pieces together to form my own band and call it Keel. So there was that brief time, literally a matter of weeks in between, where Black Sabbath came knocking. And of course, when an iconic metal band like that shows interest, you've got to answer the call. So I have fond memories of basically sitting around with Tony Iommi and Geezer Butler for 3 days, and they were trying to figure out how they could get Ozzy back.
You know, it probably worked out best for you. That was not exactly a good time for Black Sabbath, so...
Well, you know, I don't know. I think if I had come and if I had had the opportunity to actually do an album and a tour with them, who knows what might have been.
Big fan of the show, Ron Keel.
Yeah. He actually
let's not
just
gloss over that.
Ron Keel, one of my closest friends.
Yes, pure, personal dear friend. Of
yeah, he. He challenged me to a chili cook-off in Nashville next summer.
Did you take him up on that?
Yeah, I said, hell yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
And we're probably going to carpool this year. I tried to get him to do it this year, but it was too late. So, you know, I'll drive and he'll play acoustic guitar and sing was the joke there. But yeah, so Ron was there. He basically just said it was just there for a few days and things didn't really come together for whatever reason. And he went back to focusing on Keel. And then Geezer quits and then Tony Iommi basically just puts the band on hiatus for a while and starts working on what would become Seventh Star.
Yeah, his first solo album.
Yeah, now this one I 100% believe that everything, it's been consistent, it's been one story, and the way it was actually presented from the record company kind of backs it all up. Black Sabbath featuring Tony Iommi. I remember when I found this in the drugstore in Owatonna, my hometown, and I was like, holy shit, new Black Sabbath record. I bought it right away. I don't know. I like the record. What are your thoughts?
This is another one that actually my brother Nate from the podcast turned me on to. He's like, you really got to listen to this album. It's way better than all the ratings have been, all the critics, what they're saying about it. And I kind of went into it a little reluctantly because I hate being tainted by reviews.
Yeah,
it happens, and now I'm trying to be more mindful of it. But there's always, you know, especially
Cared about reviews.
And I don't either. That's the thing. But for some reason, sometimes they plant the seed.
I like to read them like after years have gone by,
and I
like,
will do that.
Yeah,
as well.
That's fun. Then, it's then, like, yes. Oh my god, I love this record. Like, this guy fucking just took a shit on it. Yes. Fuck him. Or you where does he live? I'm gonna really find wrong. I'm gonna poop on his front step.
No. You say it all about a lot of people, don't you?
Yeah, that's kind of my thing.
It is. Well, it's good. Watch out, Ron Keel.
Yeah. Stay on my good side, bud.
Better do that.
Yeah.
So this one, but...
Sioux Falls is only 4 hours away.
It's not that far.
I can drive a bag of shit 4 hours.
Well, I thought you'd just get a good one brewing, and then when
nice and fresh, yes.
Yeah, fresh and hot.
Yes, yeah. Even if I have to wait an hour or two for it to come out, yeah, it's still worth it.
Yeah, definitely. This album, I now going back and listening to it immediately out of the gate for me, this one, I thought this is an underrated album. I feel like, yes, it's not so much a Black Sabbath album. I know it's got the Black Sabbath name on it. I know it's Tony Iommi, but it's a good Hughes Iommi album. And I even still listening to it now, because we did it, if I'm not mistaken, Nate and I did a track by track on this one.
Really? And, yeah. I have to check that one out.
And we both were favorable to it. It was a pretty good album.
And that's the Disciples of the Watch podcast.
Yes, thank you. We don't crap on people's houses or porches or anything like that either.
Okay, yeah, you come to Cobras and Fire for that.
Yeah, you got to know where your bread is buttered. So listening to it more recently when we were talking about doing this, it still hits the right spots for me. And I really do enjoy this album. I actually picked it up on vinyl. I'm like, this is one I need to have. So when I'm listening to records and I'm just, because when I listen to records, I tend to just sit down and listen to records. I don't want to be moving around the house. Occasionally I'll do that, but mostly I'm in a room listening to those records and really just absorbing the music, side A, side B, or D, you know, however many sides there are. So this is a great album. Very underrated. But it's also got a vibe that's not Sabbathy. That's the thing, man.
Well, that's why. I mean, it definitely is more. It's almost like album rock by Tony Iommi. You know, it's got that kind of contemporary sound to it. I do own it on vinyl as well. I don't have my cassette that I bought at the drugstore, 30 years ago at this point. But I'm pretty sure upstairs I have 3 copies of it on CD.
Nice.
I bought the deluxe edition most recently, where it's got like a second CD.
Oh, really?
I can't remember what's on that one. Because I got the deluxe edition of The Eternal Idol as well. I think that one has Ray Gillen singing the record on it. This one must have a live performance around that time, probably with Ray Gillen singing on that. But yeah, definitely some fun stuff. I love the record. Like I agree with pretty much everything you said. For me, a standout track is that the last song, Angry Heart. It just, I don't know. I could pick a lot of it. The snoozer on this is probably the single. No Stranger to Love. Did you ever see that music video?
I did not.
Oh my God, you got it. It's just basically Tony Iommi with that, remember that leather jacket with the fringes? Yeah, he's just walking around like in alleys with steam and shit coming up at night, and like this like hot chick fading in and out for some reason, and then I don't know why, but Dobermans. There's just Dobermans running around.
Wow.
The 80s was awesome.
It sounds like a must-see.
For music. Yeah, I would definitely check out the music video. And actually, this album got a little bit of a push. I remember it being advertised in Circus and Hip Raider as much as anything around the time. MTV played that video a decent amount, and I'll hit my point home on the next record, but it's just kind of a shame that the record company forced this to be a Black Sabbath record.
Yes.
When we get to the next album.
That was a big fail.
Any other thoughts on this before we go on to the Eternal Idol?
Well, it's funny. I did have some highlights. For me, it's a pretty solid album throughout. But when I was preparing for the show, I decided I was going to kind of pick out a few tracks that I thought I could focus on for, you know, anybody that cared to, hasn't heard it and decided, well, these guys are talking about it and they enjoy it. What tracks? In for the Kill.
Yeah,
I do like No Stranger to Love.
I like it too. I love the whole record. I think that's just probably one of the weaker spots for me.
And Seven Star, I like that it's kind of got a Kashmir vibe on it.
Yeah.
And this was, I'm shocked, Eric Singer on drums.
I didn't think he came until the next record. Eric Singer's on this one?
Eric Singer's on drum. And
stolen from Lita Ford's band, which Tony was engaged to at the time.
Yeah. And yeah, the sound like things were kind of rough with those two. Yeah. I went to a party last Saturday night. I didn't get laid. I got in a fight.
It ain't no big thing. I haven't read her book, but she's a bit of a train wreck.
Yeah, a little bit. I've a lot of what she said and things that have been said about her in the press in the past, I don't know, 5 years or so has been, it's been really interesting, we'll see.
We'll bring you back for the Lita Ford episode, and we'll go into more detail there. But Eric Singer, he's basically the Catman in Kiss.
Yeah, and I really have no low spots on this album. I mean, I'm not going to say it's the best thing Black Sabbath's ever done. I'm not going to say it's the best thing Tony Iommi's ever done. I'm not just going to say it's the best album out there. I'm just saying I think it really deserves a lot more respect. And a lot of good work is put into this album. A lot of good...
Great production by Jeff Glicksman.
So, all around, just a great album. And it sounds a little 80-ish, 80s-ish, but I think it's aged well.
I do too. Yeah, I mean, it definitely kind of has a little bit of that sound, but it's not like a poster child of like like a Lionel Richie
record
would be
from this
time. You're
not going to think Wang Chung when you're listening.
Exactly. Everybody Wang Chung tonight. I think the production actually holds up very well on this one. So
I'd have to agree.
Another 6 out of 5 stars. There was no tour for this record, really. They went out for a few shows. Glenn Hughes kind of was. By his own admission now, I don't know if it was coke or whatever, but he was not in a good place chemically. And Ray Gillen was hired to fill in, and I think they did about a half a tour before it got canceled.
That sounds right, yeah.
And then they started working on...
Wasp and Anthrax, was that correct?
Yeah, I think you are right, because the Eternal Idol, they really didn't tour at all.
So yeah, it was a train wreck.
Yeah, so it didn't last very long, and I think you're right that it was Wasp and Anthrax now. But the Eternal Idol kept largely the same lineup with Ray Gillen filling in for Glenn Hughes. Now, I know Glenn Hughes was never really brought in to be the singer, so it's kind of a weird thing for someone like me, especially, you know, there's no internet, there's no way to find this stuff out. You know, Circus Magazine's like 3 months behind what actually is their reporting.
Yeah.
Which I think adds to how fun it was to think about, because you had to wait and feast and get almost nothing. And then all of a sudden there's a new Sabbath album called The Eternal Idol, which for some reason, because... there's no way to know, doesn't have Ray Gillen on vocals, even though I've just been reading for the last year that he is the current vocalist for Black Sabbath. And we find out it's a guy named Tony Martin. And the first time I heard the song The Shining, I was driving to school, and it was played on 93X. Or wait, it was Hot Rockin' 104 at the time. I'm sorry.
Thank you. We were just talking about this in band practice, and I said, what used to be the station in the Twin Cities before 93X? And I thought it was something 104, but I couldn't think of what the name was. Yeah. That's it.
Hot Rockin' 104. Yeah. So like 7 a.m, I'm listening to, and I have no idea it's Black Sabbath. I really didn't. I'm like, this song is fucking amazing. Yeah. still, the song still gets me going. The Shining, the first track. What a great song. And then when I find out it's Black Sabbath, because, you know, Black Sabbath is really kind of like Kiss for me, where, especially during this time of my life, they do no wrong. They release a record, I buy it. I see it, I absorb it, and I find a reason to like it. And looking back, this is a record that's held up. When did you first hear it? Did you hear it right when it came out? Because this was not pushed as heavy as Seven Star.
No, actually, this is all part of my phased out of, for me, it's Metallica and Megadeth and Anthrax are kind of my big bands at this point. And, you know, and for me too, in where I grew up, money was tight. So it wasn't like we were rushing out and buying all the new albums.
Oh, right.
It,
oh, yeah.
It pretty much, it was whatever somebody was able to pick up, or they borrowed from a sibling or whatever. And that would kind of get into our bloodstream from that point on. A lot of these albums were never part of my musical experience coming through. It wouldn't be till many years later that I listened to this stuff.
I was making about $120 every 2 weeks at my part-time job cooking during high school. It was about a 50-50 split between, well, I mean, I had to put gas in the car, but it was pretty cheap back then, about $1 a gallon, I think. So the rest was music and beer.
Yeah, at this point, I guess I was probably focusing on buying guitar gear or anything like that. Boy, probably riding BMX bikes. So I know I would have been just starting to play guitar at this point, big into what was going on, you know, that whole thrash movement, you know. So a lot of the stuff I was phasing out, the Quiet Riot and a lot of that other stuff at this point. So this album really never connected with me and never made it through our circles. None of the Tony Martin stuff ever did. I wouldn't discover that even. I didn't know who Tony Martin was until about, I'm going to say, 12 years ago.
He's not a good looking guy.
Well, was or isn't.
Either.
He's not now.
No, I think he's better looking now. Like he's like kind of old.
Really? I guess I never looked at any old pictures.
I got a beard and I'm a distinguished old man look. Yeah, back then he was kind of like, I don't know, mutoid man looking or something. But the album cover, I don't know if you know this, it's from an art piece. But I know that they were not given permission to use a copy of the actual photograph. So what they did is they recreated it with two live people and painted them with gold body paint.
Nice.
They wanted it that bad, apparently.
Yeah, I do remember reading something about something with that regarding the artwork on it.
So that's kind of cool. I don't know. For whatever reason, they went that far. My bitch about this is that they made no effort to push this record. It's amazing that I heard a song on the radio because it didn't get any MTV love. It was not advertised in any of the circus or hip raiders kind of stuff like that. And it was like they forced Tony to put the Black Sabbath name on a record they did. And then people were like, this isn't really Black Sabbath. So that kind of tanked because it was not Black Sabbath. And then they come back and they do a very, in my opinion, Black Sabbath-y record. And then they make no effort and just to drop them once it's done. And to me, that is the music industry in a nutshell. You hear so many stories like this. It's like this band gets signed to a big contract. They get pushed. The bosses change. And then the new boss they want to make sure they tank you. So they can drop you from the label because you're not their guy. It seems like the worst business model in the world. It's like, we're going to spend $3 million to make sure this record flops. You know, they did it with Motley Crue, with Elektra. I know Metallica had their beef. They didn't really have a flop, but you know what I mean? It's so many times you hear these things. And I think that's what happened here, is that Black Sabbath had worn out their welcome at Warner Brothers. They were kind of a dying brand. But they were a dying brand on the record before, and they insisted a non-Black Sabbath-sounding record have the Black Sabbath name on it. And then when he follows it up with a more Black Sabbath-sounding album, they just pull all support. The album does even worse, and then it just disappears. I mean, you're more likely to find this in a cutout bin, you know, 6 months after it came out.
I don't remember seeing any print advertising. My exposure with MTV was very limited because we were either out riding bikes or doing sports or whatever. And only a couple of my friends had cable back then.
Shakopee got cable really late?
No, I was in Burnsville.
Okay.
I grew up in Burnsville, so just, you know, not in a very well-to-do area, so to speak. And
we definitely didn't have it at our house.
No, nor did
it was
I.
Just me and my dad.
We had a black and white television, actually, the whole time in my house.
We had a TV that was color, but it was fuzzy as fuck.
Yeah.
And we weren't in the Twin Cities, so, like, we had the antenna,
right.
It's like, You get like, you know, 3.5 channels.
If you're lucky.
On a but, good, you know, the thing you let you focus on music more. I like probably just like I wasn't BMXing, but I was playing guitar and listening to music and trying real hard to get laid, but no game.
Yeah.
None at all, man.
Well, that's why you need your music to get the ladies.
Yeah, exactly. You know, put on Eternal Light. I'm like, I was always picking the wrong record, it turns out, Gene. It's like I'm putting on Born Again.
But at least this record cover is more inclined to to get the ladies interested.
Yeah. Put you in the mood, baby.
Unless you were pulling out Born Again immediately afterwards and then saying, what do you think of this cover? Then you just dry them back up again.
This is the best Tony Martin record, front to back. This is an amazing Sabbath album. Again, just like the last two records. I think these are three very solid albums in a row. You know, I'll go use our term, perfectly rated. Why they didn't break through at this point, Black Sabbath was kind of an odd brand at this point for people to accept, and they were changing singers and members so much. I mean, you got a bass player named Dave the Beast Spitz, whose brother was in Anthrax. Mm-hmm. Probably how they got that tour with Black Sabbath and the Seventh Star tour, if you think about it. Everything's much more closer than you think. But what are your thoughts?
I don't know if I'd say it's the best one with Tony for me, but it is a good album. So I'd easily recommend throwing this one on and giving it a spin. I'd actually be interested in getting this one on vinyl just to have, because I think it would be a good just focus album. Sit down and tune in and absorb. Tony Martin's a great singer. I don't think he's like a unique singer. He sounds like a singer of the time, so to speak.
He's like if somebody who was a big fan of Dio got on American Idol.
My notes are Dio with a little bit of Don Dokken in there.
Yeah, I know. I do think he's a great singer. I think part of the reason this album is one of the best ones, or in my opinion, the best with him, is that he didn't write the lyrics. I think he's a garbage lyricist.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. And that's obviously a little bit of...
We'll get into that, but road. Yeah.
Yes, but that is a very good point. This I think, does have a better vibe for me because the lyrics don't tank it. But a very well-sung album, everything all around.
Again,
is
Jeff
good.
Glicksman producing, it sounds great.
It's just a little bit tough calling it a Black Sabbath album. It's almost too bad Tony wasn't from the previous album on through the Tony Martin era. They could have been a whole different band, and I think they would have had more success. I think the name Black Sabbath was probably bringing them down at this point. Because people are so used to doom with what Ozzy brought, with the way the whole band started, and I know,
and Ozzy went on such a different, drastic, you know, stratospheric level.
Yes,
I mean, listening to Blizzard of Oz versus the last, you know, even like the last two records with Dio, which I think stand alone. I mean, it was just, I mean, Ozzy was going forward, and Black Sabbath was still kind of like being this dinosaur almost.
They were trying to see what the bands were doing around them. What was happening in the scene? What was the vibe? And they were trying to kind of grasp onto what was going on. And I think that's part of the reason that Ozzy was unhappy with the band, because those last two albums with Ozzy, he wasn't real pleased with.
Plus, Ozzy's insane. He's not stable.
And he may have been difficult to work with back then as well.
Yeah.
He went with his gut, and obviously, you know, Sharon had a vision.
Yeah.
Sharon and Randy Rhoads, I think.
Randy, oh my God. Huge probably part of his success.
Because everything that happened after that, because for me, Jakey Lee is my favorite Ozzy guitar player. But I don't think you get there without Randy. Randy and Eddie Van Halen were just pushing this next wave, which would become basically hair metal in the 80s. Tony really didn't get the respect he deserved
until
much later.
I would agree with that. Yep. I think people took him for granted.
Kind of like Ace Frehley would not have worked in Kiss in the 80s, I don't think. Still has that kind of old style of playing, but it worked when he came back, even though they really didn't do any recording with him, but suddenly that seemed relevant again.
But Ace had more, I think he had got more respect.
Probably a little bit, but he was also kind of a joke around this time. Frehley's Comet came out. And,
yeah, that's a good point.
You know, but I love this record. I really do. This is one I go back to and I listen to from beginning to end. Kind of like what you're talking about, where you sit down and kind of put it in. Ray Gillen, the deluxe edition of this is almost identical, except like even in production quality, except for it's Ray Gillen singing it, all the songs. And I might like that just a little bit better. I don't know. It's difficult because I'm so familiar with the original version, but it's definitely worth checking out.
That's a good tip. I'll have to make note of that.
I'll burn you a copy of that. What was the other thing I was going to burn you?
That album from Mark St. John.
Yeah, White Tiger.
White Tiger.
Yeah. All right, which brings us to Headless Cross. Their first record with IRS record label was released April 24th in 1989, and this was produced by Tony Iommi because he was sick of all the drama. Gone is basically everybody. He brought in Cozy Powell. Neil Murray ended up being the touring bass player, but I think Bob Daisley played bass on the record. Jeff Nichols still hung around, kind of picking up the crumbs of what was left of Black Sabbath, the fumes at the time. And then, of course, Tony Martin is back, and now he's writing lyrics. They're goofy. It's like he's trying to be kind of like, I want to be Dio and Satanic, and I'm not very creative.
I think he was trying to capture some of the fire that they had back when Sabbath was mysterious and ominous and dark. And, you know, you put on that first Black Sabbath album as a kid and you hear the lightning and the thunder and you hear him with Ozzy singing, and it can just bring,
watch as this,
and it can make the hairs on your arms stand.
Yeah,
up, you
it's
know?
A creepy fucking song, but
and it's so powerful. And I think he was like thinking that, well, I'm going to use that as inspiration and I'm going to draw from Sabbath's history and bring that into what we're doing here. And it just, I feel it just failed big time.
Yeah, and it would have been nice to have Geezer kind of going along at this point too, but I think he was looking at Sabbath as kind of a joke too.
Well, he was working with Ozzy at this point, wasn't he?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, at this point he was actually on the No Rest for the Wicked. So yeah, that's right. Remember, like, it seemed like for a while it was like Tony and Geezer versus Ozzy, and then all of a sudden it became Ozzy and Geezer versus Tony, and it was like kind of this weird thing going back and forth. And now Ozzy and Geezer are just carrying on with this great thing, and Tony keep playing with Cozy Powell. I mean, now, what was Cozy Powell like famous for? He was from another band, right?
He was in a bunch of bands. He was in Rainbow.
Rainbow is who I'm thinking of.
You know, and that's one thing I wanted to bring up too. When I'm listening through the Tony Martin era of Black Sabbath, it almost feels like Tony's got a little bit of inspiration from Rainbow to me.
Okay.
With some of these songs. It's like he's trying to appeal to a wider audience than what they did with Dio and what they did with Ozzy. So it's interesting that all of a sudden Cozy Powell's involved.
Yeah, I thought it was an odd bring-in, and I think he's a weird-looking guy. For whatever that's worth.
Yeah,
I was very
really fixated on people's looks in this.
Very much. Yeah, it's important. You can't be a good quarterback with a stupid name, Case Keenum.
Ouch.
I was very excited for this record because of how much I loved Eternal Idol. And what a bummer. I think the production is shit. I think the songs are okay. It's probably the second best Tony Martin. Actually, I think I like Tear or whatever that one is a little better than this one. But I don't know. Now I think about it, I like Cross Purposes better than this one. This one actually kind of falls down the list for me. It's better than Forbidden, but that's not exactly a badge of honor.
He saw the world dim with the glow of the vertical sun. His skin crept cold. Hours of dying. Misguided mortals, you burn with me. Spirit of man cannot be song.
Yeah, I'm going to say that this one is in the Tony Martin era. This is second to last. I don't understand why they didn't bring in some ringers. Was Desmond Child busy with Kiss or what was going on? Why couldn't they have somebody help writing lyrics?
You wonder if they were almost taboo for people like that at the time, though.
Oh, that's
you
a good
know,
point.
It's like ah,
Black Sabbath name, bringing them down again. Yeah, like I'm saying,
I don't want to be associated with this. You know, that might kill my career. If it doesn't like work. But it worked for Alice Cooper with Desmond Child around this time.
Yeah, it's weird because musically, I think it's not bad. But with what Tony is doing with the lyrics, it makes it not...
And we're talking Tony Martin.
Tony Martin.
Yeah.
Really drags the songs down.
Tony Iommi actually talked about that after the first record. He said, you know, let's kind of not try so hard to be this evil demonic thing. And then, like, he comes back with, like, Norse god mythology stuff on the next record. And he's like, I had no idea what to do with that.
No, yeah, that's...
Something like that from Tony's book, Iron Man. Look, do you want to... What's your standout track for this one? Because I really don't have one. Probably When Death Calls is my favorite, but I don't know. What do you think?
I don't have one. And I couldn't even pick a favorite off of this one. I was so... Every time he started singing about Lucifer and Satan, it just really lowered the bar.
Yeah.
And
now, if he would have been like the singer from the beginning, I don't think they would have been considered as satanic because his version of Satanism is very, very campy. You know what I mean? It just doesn't come across as evil. It comes off.
It's like, yeah, Bret Michaels sang about how Lucifer is. No, it's not going to work.
Well, Bret Michaels talks. He doesn't sing.
Well,
so.
I don't know. In a way, I almost feel like maybe Tony was getting in his own way. Tony Iommi, him and Cozy Powell producing this one. I almost feel like they almost got in their own way on this.
What was Cozy's production role? More snare. Bring the snare up.
Yeah, was this the album that, or maybe I'm thinking the next one that...
No, you're right. This is...
A little bit loud in the drums department.
Oh, maybe he did. Maybe that was his role. It's like, you deserve production credit for this drum sound.
Would you like to hear some drummer jokes?
Of course I would.
What do you call a drummer that breaks up with his girlfriend?
I don't know. What do you call a drummer that breaks up with his girlfriend?
Homeless.
That brings us to TYR. Now, officially for the first time in Baco's life, since he first got into Black Sabbath, I have officially checked out. I didn't know this record was coming out. I didn't know it was out until, even though I spent so much time in record stores, until I saw it sitting at a friend's house. And I never went back and got it until, fairly recently, actually, probably within the last 6 or 7 years. And only because at that point I realized I was only 2 CDs short of owning everything Black Sabbath had to release, and that was this one and Headless Cross. I bought Headless Cross when it came out, but I sold it probably in college, back when you could get $4 or $5 for a used CD.
Yeah, the good days.
Yeah, in the good old days. But I kind of wish I had it back now. Yeah, I'll eventually stumble across it. But I bought this, you know, like I said, I was like, well, I only need these two. I see them used all the time. I have not seen Headless Cross in the last 6 or 7 years. I've seen this one a couple times, but I bought it the first time I did it. It's actually better than I thought it would be. I think there's some decent stuff on here.
I know Tony was a little bit slagging on the lyrical content of it. I feel it fits much
Tony
better.
Martin.
Tony Iommi was slagging. I mean, Tony Martin wrote the lyrics, but Tony Iommi kind of slagged a little bit because it had the Norse mythology involvement and all that such.
Yeah.
But it didn't. It was so much better than the previous album. Lyrically.
Production-wise too. As far as the audio quality, it's a more pleasant listen than Headless Cross. I do have the quote from Tony that I just mentioned. I put it down here. This is from Tony Iommi's book. Tony Martin had just come into the band, and he assumed, "Oh, Black Sabbath, it's all about the devil." So his lyrics were full of devil and Satan. It was too much in your face. We told them to be a little bit more subtle about it. So for Tyr, is that how you pronounce it, by the way? T-Y-R, Tyre? He did all these lyrics about Nordic gods and whatnot. It took me a while to get my head around that. For whatever that means, that was his comment. I don't have a lot to say about another one I just said. I like the album cover. I like the production. Anna Monday, I think, is a fun song. Jerusalem is cool.
Thank you.
kind of go pretty much with what you said as far as standout tracks, but I think it's a pretty good solid album. Probably Jerusalem being the strongest of the whole collection, but yeah, the album cover is pretty cool. I have really nothing to say bad about it. I'd recommend this one for anybody who wants to experiment with the Tony Martin era. Give this one a whirl. You know, skip over
what we talked about.
Yeah, and then go from into tier.
Yeah,
or however you say it.
Yeah, tire.
I say tier, but
yeah, I say tier too. But I don't know. For a while I thought it was supposed to be TYR. You know, I don't know.
I've heard people refer to it as TYR.
All right. Well, whatever the fuck it's called, just good luck finding it. Although it's probably, on YouTube or Spotify or
it's
something
on YouTube,
at this point.
Yep.
Okay. Brings us to Cross Purposes, released January 31st, 1994. Another record I didn't hear till much later. I actually bought Cross Purposes Live, the VHS and CD double pack, before I ever bought the studio album. You know, Tony Martin and Dio, for me, I talked about it in the Dio thing. I don't think he does Ozzy songs good. They're just too, they're almost like going to see a Broadway play of Ozzy. You know, it's like, what is this? It's just a little too much. So the video is kind of a bummer for me, which is maybe why I never went out and got the CD. But I bought it, again, fairly recently, and not that bad. What do you got?
When you listen to all the Tony Martin stuff, and then you hit this kind of left-hand turn with what they did with Dio, and then you come back to Tony Martin, it's just kind of it's almost a little bit of musical whiplash, because I felt like they really Dioized and Sabbathed that album, Dehumanizer, and then they came back to what they were doing with Tony Martin almost like they didn't skip a beat.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like almost a musical whiplash kind of a thing.
Now, Geezer stuck around after the Dio stuff for this record.
But it's a very much a Tony Martin album. It has, for me,
which means it sucks.
No, not by any means. But it was just kind of strange how they found right back into that same kind of pocket that they had with Tony.
This probably was more natural for them, because they just kind of kicked Tony out for a couple of years and then brought him back in. And of course, he almost came back in during the Dehumanizer thing anyway, but he just, I don't know, again, he's such a strong, powerful singer, but just so boring. No personality.
Listen, boring seems a little bit strong to me. But yeah, he lacks, I don't know if it's an energy or if it's a uniqueness. Like when you listen to Dio, you listen to early Ozzy, or anything up until more recent Ozzy, for me, I'm going to say that.
Okay. Because you're totally wrong, asshole.
So some of those vocalists, there's something so unique, and there's a spark to what they bring. And then you get these vocalists that have kind of they fit and they sound good, but they don't stand out. It's almost like when you go with your parents to the store back in the 80s and they buy the white labeled cans that said beer on them. It was generic, and
yeah,
it was all the same.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what you get with this. Now,
he's the white box that just has cornflakes on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or corn, whatever.
Yeah, that's dating us too, because now generic shit looks all cool, right?
Yes,
it's got to have proper packaging and stuff. It doesn't say.
Or they're ripping off names.
Right. Yeah. But now, back
Captain
when we were
Punch.
There, basically it was like, here's a box that says I'm poor.
Yes. You had to hang your head when you walked out of the store with this box.
You didn't want the cash. You want to look him in the eye while he's ringing up these like white boxes of mac and cheese. And
So, yeah, I'm not going to say
Tony Martin is the white box of mac and cheese.
Switch illuminates you.
stuck around. He showed up and he did his job. That's,
and he did.
Yeah, and his boots were always on and he was ready to work. Which brings us to the last record of the Tony Martin era and my introduction to the podcast you co-host called Disciples of the Watch. I saw this. I just checked out your podcast shortly after we met to see kind of like what your show was about. And this was a fairly recent episode at that time. And you had done a track by track on the album Forbidden. And I'm like, oh, my God. Because like I did one. We did a two part episode on Kiss the Elder at a record oh, I wow. love. And I'm like,
you're the guy.
Yeah, I'm the guy. I thought there was a chance because I have given this record so many opportunities to make me like it. And I don't know. I will. I do that all the time. I've tried Sonic Boom and Monster with Kiss over and over, and I just keep coming away with like, God, this just is fucking garbage. And this record, too, I don't even make it to the end. But yet I listen to your show because I'm like, maybe if I hear somebody talk about this and they're passionate about it, I will get it and I will hear something I didn't hear. It turns out you have pretty much the exact same feelings as I do about the record. And I respected that more. I'm like, oh, my God, they just did a record they didn't like. That was the catalyst for me thinking about doing Sonic Boom with our show. It's like, why don't we do a record we don't like? I mean, especially as much shit as we talk, we could riff on that for hours if we hate something. It's easy to talk about what you love, but I know your thoughts on this record. Why don't you share it with the listeners who haven't listened to that episode of Disciples of the Watch?
It's garbage.
Yeah,
it's complete garbage. This one was produced by Ernie C, and I really am glad they brought Ernie in. He basically asked to do it. And Tony said, you know, what do we got to lose? Because
explain tell everybody who Ernie C is.
Ernie C is the guitar player from Body Count,
yeah.
Ice-T's metal band.
Yeah.
And God love him, but I don't know if he shouldn't be producing or if this just was, there was no point in this album whatsoever.
All I know is that when I reached out to him to do a quick interview for him, nothing. Never got back to me.
Really?
Yeah. So fuck you, Ernie C. Fuck you, man.
That's too bad.
Fuck you in this Forbidden record. No, it would have been fun to actually talk to him.
Yeah, definitely. I'd like
maybe
to
he
get
didn't get the message,
it.
But I'd like to take it personal if it's okay.
Well, that's all right. That's all right. If he gets a bag of shit on his porch anytime soon, we'll know why. Or where it came from.
Loose Cannon likes it when I say this, but I make a lot of assumptions. So.
Yeah, there's no redeeming songs on this one. I cannot find, you cannot polish a turd. That's as simple as that. And I know right now Tony is talking about or maybe even currently remixing this album.
Yeah.
So he is really trying hard to polish this turd. Maybe there's something that's on the cutting room floor. Maybe there's something that we just don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, it's the same songs though, right? Is it still going to have Ice-T rapping on the opening track?
Who are you fooling? You're caught in a complex catacomb of your own inadequacies and pitiful weaknesses. Your soul secretes insecurity, so you live on the reflection side of the mirror. You're terrified of true power. You fear.
If that doesn't get you to press eject, you might like the record.
It is not a good way to start. You agreed. You have to.
And the album cover, what is that, like Mad Magazine art or something like that? It's just like this weird pile of humans.
I don't know if they were trying to go with a little bit of a throwback, kind of like, hey, let's do something kind of more simplistic. I don't know.
And by this point, too, Geezer checked out again.
Well, he's good thing.
Yeah, he
good
knew what he was doing, yeah.
In the podcast, I actually said this sounds like a bad Black Sabbath cover band trying to write songs that they think would sound like Black Sabbath.
With Tony Martin.
And with Tony Martin. Yeah, he could have. I wonder if he's busy.
Because how many people go, man, I want to sit down and write a Black Sabbath record, you know, the Tony Martin era.
Right, not even Tony Martin. Well, maybe Tony Martin.
Yeah, probably just Tony Martin.
Just Tony Martin, yeah. No.
But anyway, do you think Kanye West likes this record?
He probably sleeps with it under his pillow.
He probably makes him feel like Superman, yeah.
He probably does.
Yeah.
He wants to be the next Tony Martin.
Well, so we both agree that this is a pile of shit.
Yes, not worth anybody's time. Unless you really, you know, if you really want to punish yourself, get out your flogging tools, put on some Forbidden, light some candles, maybe a glass of wine. Make it special.
Well, if they release it on 180-gram vinyl, with like a double disc thing. I'll probably get it again.
I can see if you're a completionist, but
I am, by the way, I'm a total completionist.
And there's never a need to even crack the seal on it, dude. This will be mint condition, and when you die, your family could sell it for half of what you paid for.
If you think about it, with like the other options to listening to it, you can complete your set. Like you said, never open it. And if you really have to hear it, just click it on YouTube. And about 2 minutes later, you'll realize we gave you the best advice you could ever get.
Yes. That's the best way to consume this. Put it on YouTube, get a nice compressed sound version of it. And that's all you need is.
All right.
And you'll experience it. And then you can move on with your life. And either you'll thank us for never listening to it, or you'll thank us for telling you to turn it off after you hear Ice-T rap. On a Black Sabbath album.
American Treasure Ice-T, by the way.
Yeah, I like Body Count, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But this isn't fit.
Cobras on Fire officially considers Ice-T an American treasure.
Okay, good.
Anyway, Gene, that's it. We've gone through all the Sabbath stuff.
That's a lot of years.
You want to get out of here?
Absolutely.
All right, so Gene, thank you so much. Make sure you check out the Disciples of the Watch podcast, listeners. Fellow Twin Cityan, Minnesotan, Gene Vogel, co-host. Who's your other host? Give him a little shout-out.
Nate Matnich. He's a yoga instructor about town. I can't remember the name of his studio off the top of my head, but yeah, he's all-around metalhead and various other genres of music, not just a metalhead. But yeah, that's where we connect and we talk a lot on the podcast. And occasionally we play independent bands as well.
And you, of course, are the eye candy of the band Mortificator.
I try to be. I do my best.
Yeah, turning the ladies on with your, I don't know, whatever, just your vibe.
The move.
Essence.
In my moves.
You got some fucking moves, that's for sure, man.
Well, thank you.
I've stolen some. They didn't work as well for me, but...
You just got to hone them.
Yeah, anyway, much appreciation. I'm sure if Loose Cannon didn't get lost in the Lost era, he'd say the same thing. But, of course, thank you for coming on Cobras and Fire. You want to get out of here?
Sounds good to me, man.
Rock's not dead.
No thanks to Tony Martin.
We're just getting to know each other, right? I haven't tried to put some sexy music on for you.
No,
so.
Not yet. So.
Hey, can you give me just a minute? We're almost done here. Yeah.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.